So I think it was about 2012 time frame, somewhere in there, where this fisherman named Scott Murray, who has a house down on Baffin Bay, had contacted me and said, "Hey, we're having some real odd issues down here with black drum. The black drum were coming in emaciated. When they were filleted, the meat was greasy and they look like skeletons." And he said, "We need to figure out what's going on down here. That might be a water quality issue." That's really what kind of kicked off working down in Baffin Bay.
I'm Mike Wetz, and I'm the chair for Coastal Ecosystem Processes at the Heart Research Institute.
Jace Tunnel, and I'm at the Mission Aransas National Estuarine Research Reserve, where I'm the reserve director. 2006, I started working for the Coastal Bend Bays and Estuaries Program, and they're a nonprofit. Within that, we have water quality projects, restoration projects, things like that. And so whenever there's a water quality issue, somebody would come to the estuary program and say, "Hey, what might be the problem here?"
For some time down on the West End, we were experiencing a lot of talk in the community. Every time we'd go somewhere to a restaurant or to the store, people were talking about what is wrong with the bay. And these are people that you have to listen to because they live their whole lives down there. And you don't disregard that. So I began to listen, and I also saw big changes myself and decided that it was time to really do something about it. So we called a meeting at my bay house. We invited commercial fishermen, fishing guides, sport fishermen, bed and breakfast owner, restaurant owner, a couple other entities. I also invited Dr. Mike Wetz and Jace Tunnel with Coastal Bend Bays and Estuaries. They came and they listened, and we vented for several hours. We all knew there was something wrong with the water because the blooms we were having and the episodic fish kills, were getting more and more frequent. So that's how it started.
That was Scott Murray. Today on the Golf Podcast, we're traveling down the coast to Baffin Bay, Texas, and hearing from Scott Murray and some of the other longtime trophy trout anglers. These folks have spent decades fishing Baffin, and when the fishery started to decline, they were the first to notice. This is Jen, by the way, and I want to let you know that the Watershed series is made possible by the Heart Research Institute for Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. In this series, we've been focused on water quantity, that is, the importance of how much fresh water flows into our bays and estuaries. Water quality, as we'll see in the Baffin Bay story, is also needed for good fishing. A decline in water quality has ripple effects for the seagrasses, shrimp, crabs, trout, and almost everything else in the bay. We're going to hear about that from the lived experiences of anglers interviewed in the Baffin Bay Oral History Project. That's a project I started to document and preserve this history. If you're interested in hearing more, you can listen to the full audio interviews and read transcripts on the Golf Podcast website and digital archives. The Baffin Bay fishing community bears witness to a fishery that has declined over many years. But their special ties to the bay, as we'll see on the next episode, prompted many to get involved in restoration efforts.
Well, Baffin Bay to me is a very special, iconic bay. There's just nothing like it on the Texas coast or anywhere in the United States for that matter. It's just a super, I guess you might say, remote area that hasn't experienced a lot of development. Most of the shorelines are unencumbered, they're undeveloped. It's still a wild place. And that's what really drew me to Baffin Bay and my interest in it. It's the only hypersaline estuary in the United States and very few in the world. There's about 10 square miles total of serpulid reefs in Baffin Bay, scattered around the bay.
The other thing that's really cool about Baffin versus other saltwater destinations is it's surrounded to the east by Padre Island National Seashore, undeveloped. North side of the bay is the King Ranch, no development. South side of the bay is Kennedy Ranch, no development. So you go down there and it's like stepping back in time. You don't see houses. Well, you see some on Spoil Islands, fishermen cabins, but you don't see development or anything like that. So it's just a really untouched, natural place, that's really unique and different than most.
memorable things down there are some of the storms that will come over Baffin. And Baffin is located about 27 degrees north latitude. And that, if you go out to Padre Island, out on Penn's, Padre Island National Seashore, that's where two currents come together. One of them moving from the south to the north, another moving from the north to the south. They come together and one turns out and one turns in, and the one that turns in deposits a lot of large shells on the beach. And there's a lot of weather associated with that, and a lot of that weather that occurs in the Gulf because of these converging currents will actually carry across the barrier island, over the lagoon, and over Baffin Bay. And there will be storms that will generate in the Gulf and move west. And it will blow and rain and thunder and lightning like you've never seen. But if you go 1 mile or even a quarter mile north of Baffin or a quarter mile south of Baffin, it'll be a bluebird day. It's just that little isolated area at 27 degrees north where these storms will move across. And I've had one very harrowing experience getting caught in one of those storms. But we'll save that for another time.
Most of the people that would go down there were told constantly about the rocks and what they call the Baffin Bay specials, which are big storms that would come up unexpectedly, and you're down there and you've got to figure out how to get out of there, and maybe you're away from your boat and you can have winds go from dead calm to 50, 60 miles an hour and water spouts and everything else. And if you're smart, all you do is get on the shoreline and relax for a while or get behind something else. But a lot of people try to come back, and a lot of people don't make it. I mean, there's a lot of history of people that being swamped and not living through it.
So it's a unique ecosystem, but there was always been a mystique about Baffin. One, its difficulty to access. Two, the rocks. There was kind of a mystique about the rocks. There was a little bit of a, you know, you better be careful. You know, knock your lower unit off. You know, there's rocks, rocks, rocks. I think a lot of the regular guys kind of promoted that theory to try to keep some of the less experienced people out. You know, better not go back in there.
You stand in the bow of the boat and you look at three rocks and you see the third rock's got a big black ring around it. That's all trout. Swim around circles on top of the rock. The mullet would be on top of the rock, staying away from the ambush. They would stay on top of the rock to stay. They wouldn't dare swim over the edge of that rock. And you could always tell that the rocks that had fish on it would have the mullet on top of them. If they had mullet on top of the rock, you had a bunch of predators under. It was like a bunch of wolves waiting for the sheep to make a mistake. And that's what was happening. It's really neat.
And the more I was told about this and that, rocks here, watch out for this, don't go there. And the more I found that was incorrect. That was we used to call that a decoy. A lot of guys that knew much about it would use the big decoy. In other words, they'd tell you, oh, you don't want to go there. There's rocks all over that place and this and that. And I'd go in there and I'd say, there's no rocks here. Most of the time it was mudlion and lots of fish. They didn't want you to know about their fishing. And then I started finding areas myself that nobody else knew about. And that's when the fun really began, because I had a number of good years where I caught lots of oversized fish, which I caught a lot of static about eventually, because that was what I loved to do, was chase the big fish, the fish 30 inches to 34 inches in length and weighing up to 12 so pounds.
There were big fish as well, a lot of big fish in Baffin, which is the mystique of Baffin Bay anyway, is big trout. That's the whole story behind Baffin Bay.
That was where you went to catch a great big trophy trout.
Size of trout and the number of large trout that came out of Baffin Bay were pretty much legendary on the Texas coast. The state record for the past probably 40 years have come somewhere from the Laguna Madre. And Mike Blackwood, still fishing, 81 years old, still fishing. Saw him a couple weeks ago. You know, he had the state record for about 20 years. And he caught that fish in Baffin. And then it was broken by fish caught in Baffin. And then ultimately it was broken by a guy who caught a fish down at Port Mansfield, which is still in the lagoon.
And I wanted to go check out a place that I hadn't fished before. And I walked around the corner, caught a real nice trout, about a 31-inch or 8 or 9 pounds. And on the first sandbar that I came around the corner, there's a little side bay. There was what I thought was two trout. And it turned out to be just one. Just one extremely large fish about 6 feet from shore. And to try to make the long story as short as possible, we weighed it 8 or 9 times, one time even on a doctor's baby scale. And it only weighed the same thing twice, and that was at right at 13 3/4. But I took 13.9, and that beat the old record by half a pound. And that was fine. And that turned out to be a very useful item, because after that, people would believe anything I said about fishing.
So it's very, very well known for trophy trout fishing. And that's one of the things that really drew me to the bay, because I've always been a maniac when it comes to trying to catch big trout. And we have caught our share of them down there, believe me.
Being able to drive down that shoreline and see a big black wad of trout, nobody sees that anymore. You know, just a big black ball of trout coming down the shoreline, just hundreds and hundreds of 5 to 6, 7 pound trout. And now those schools are busted up. They don't school like that. Their schools are 5 to 7 fish. They're wolf packs. They're not big, giant schools. The redfish are still schooling, but the thing that was amazing was how many schools of big trout we had. That was just unbelievable. And the clear water, you could see those fish in 5 or 6 foot of water. You see those black balls of trout around the deep rock structures. It was so easy. Just throw anything you want to in the middle of them, they'd eat it. Yeah, that was something else.
People saying they had a good day, and a good day is defined differently now than it was 15 years ago. I mean, a good day now, 15 years ago, was a horrible day. But a lot of people are just into it. They've only been fishing for 5 or 7, 10 years. They don't know what the good days were. They don't know what the bay's capable of producing.
People want to go to Baffin to catch the trophy trout, the TT, the trophy trout. Trophy trout have changed. It was interesting. I got honored by a group of people who like to do this last year. And one of them, I was talking to him about it. And he said, well, you started talking about catching big trout, trophy trout. Then you said something about half-growns. What's a half-grown? And I said, well, a half-grown trout is 24, 26, 27 inches long. It's not a grown fish and grown until it's 30 inches or better. He just shook his head and said, those are our trophy fish now, your half-growns. And I said, well, that kind of says it all.
I guess the major thing is water. Water quality is unbelievable difference. So, you know, it seemed like in the 80s, in the early 80s, on a north wind, I could turn the corner and comport the pass and turn the engine off, put the trolling motor down, and start working across the Badlands. I'd work it all the way out to Revere Channel and see the bottom all the way out into 9 feet. Just absolutely gin clear. I'm talking about the kind of water you see in the Bahamas, the kind of water that's so clear that when you raise your arm to catch a trout, if he saw you, he'd spook because he saw you. You had to wait till the fish were facing away from you to make a cast. That's how clear it was.
Another has been that of the degradation of the Serpulid Reefs in Baffin. Those reefs are geologically somewhere in the vicinity of their last great formation, a creation of those reefs, of which there's said to be about 10 square miles of Serpulid Reefs in the bay. The peak of their establishment was about 3,000 to 3,500 years ago when those reefs formed. Apparently, those reefs have been in decline for many years. Specifically, the one in front of my cabin at Comporta Pass, there's nothing left of the structure of that reef. Of course, one of the real benefits of those reefs are its great habitat. And these are big fish holders. So the habitat Baffin is so famous for, the Serpulid Reefs, are just not as abundant as they once were.
We had some very strong freezes. This more recent one that we've had didn't compare to the ones we had like in 89. We had one in 83 where on the south side of Baffin Bay, there was a white line on the south side of Baffin. From a distance, you could see it. It looked like foam, but what it was dead fish stacked up on the south side of Baffin Bay. And after the freeze of 89, I did not catch a trout for 2 years.
And in 1983, I didn't catch a single fish out of Baffin Bay until the end of summer, and it was redfish. I'd go down and look for trout, and there wasn't anything. Killed dang near everything.
Then the fishery came back, and then we had another one in 89, and that was a really bad one also. And with 89, it killed all these fish, and then early in the spring, we had a lot of heavy rains, and the brown tide started that year. That was when the brown tide started. And where Baffin used to always have this gorgeous water, I mean, wind blew, it would get muddy, but if it wasn't too windy, the water was this beautiful sandy green. You could see the rocks under the surface of the water. You could see the drop-offs. You could see the potholes. It was beautiful. With the brown tide hit, then for the next 5 years, you couldn't see 6 inches in the water. It was just nasty brown look. And it totally changed fishing for me.
And we got probably 10 or 15 miles down the King Ranch shoreline. All of a sudden, we come across a line, and the water turns yellow, orange. They call it brown tide, but it looked almost orange to me.
I tied orange flies, clouser, with orange deer and some feathers anyway. I caught a lot of fish in the brown tide, fly fishing and plug fishing. But yeah, that turned out pretty good for me.
Areas that had been covered in good seagrass just became sand. You know, they died and went away. A lot of the dead weeds and so forth matted up along your shorelines, and it really messed with the bottom there. The consistency of the bottom became like a muck, some places knee deep. When your seagrasses die, well, crabs, shrimp, everything else dies along with it. The fish, we found out, mostly were still there. I really don't think we've ever recovered fully. The fishery hadn't from that time.
The grass is different. The wavy, long grass, you'd be standing on tide gauge bar, and when the waves would come in, it would just be like wheat. Like, have you seen wind blowing through a wheat field? That's what it looked like. The grass, it turned brown and then green. It was just beautiful. The water on tide gauge bar was gin clear, and the grass kept it that way.
For instance, the land cut, there was so many shrimp in the land cut. You know, there was two or three cabins in the land cut, and people would turn the lights on at night, and it was just solid eyeballs under the lights, just shrimp popping out of the water. It was so thick when the current ran, if you stood in the water with a pair of shorts on, the shrimp would hit your leg so hard you had to get out of the water. You could put a dip net down and fill up a dip net with shrimp. There were millions of shrimp.
The shrimp in particular, there used to be a great shrimp run in the fall that we fished. And after we'd have a big cold front, a good cold front would come through, and it would lower the water level, and the shrimp would start heading out. And you had about a 4 to 6 week period there where you could fish under the birds. The birds would be working over the schools of shrimp coming out. I think the number of shrimp and whatnot are significantly less than what they might have been at one time.
The other, I guess, big change that you see is a huge increase in fishing pressure. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, you could probably count the number of fishing guides on two hands at the most. And now on the Gulf Coast, there's around 1,200 fishing guides, and there's more every year. Of course, the target species for years has been spotted sea trout, which certainly has an impact on the fishery. The number of saltwater fishing license sales is going up every year, and we're recruiting more and more saltwater fishermen to the Laguna Madre and Baffin Bay. So pressure is a big factor. We've seen a huge increase in boat traffic, and at the launches, you can just see it expand every year.
The rocks were so important because that's where the fish are going to hang around. And until the development of GPS, you really had to know where you were going and what you were doing. Well, nowadays, everybody has a GPS. Everybody can buy all the tracks to all the places that they want to go for, you know, $500 or $1,000. So now, instead of having some places where you could kind of maybe go and get away from some people because maybe they wouldn't want to come right in there to that spot because they didn't know exactly how to get there. Now they're going to be right there. So instead of you being able to fish a little larger area, and I'm not talking about taking over half the bay or something with you and your buddies. I'm talking about, you know, maybe getting where somebody's not within 100 yards of you or 200 yards from you and actually get out without somebody running across your line with a power boat.
My dad spent his last fishing days here on the bay, became fairly competent. He liked to go with me, but he had his own boat, and I'd see him sometimes. I was standing on tide gauge bar one morning, and I was down there with some friends. Real early, I hear this boat coming way around the corner. She's throwing up a big rooster tail behind it, and I thought, who is this yahoo? Golly, he's going to run right over us, and it was my father. Thanks, Dad. But at any rate, we spent some fun times here at the end of his life fishing, and he liked it here as well.
The voices you just heard were Scott Murray, David McKee, Mike Blackwood, Eric Kern, Cliff Webb, John Sutton, Phil Blackmar, Bo Kratz, Cookie Cooper, David Rousey, and Reese Hunt Jr. as part of the Baffin Bay Oral History Project. When bay health worsened, Scott Murray decided to take action and get some scientific help. That's when Jace Tunnell and Mike Wetz came in.
So we wanted to see what had been done, talk to other fishermen and locals about what are the current concerns. You know, is there more than just the black drum that you're seeing that are emaciated? And it turns out there was, because we ended up going down to Scott Murray's house where he brought in a lot of the commercial fishermen, recreational anglers, guides. And it turns out that everyone kind of had a similar story to where, you know, it was really good in the late 90s of catching trout and fish and the crabbing was great. And there had just been this steady decline over time.
A lot of those folks had been fishing that bay for a long time. And so they'd noticed these changes happening. What we did is we went into it to listen, just to hear what the ideas were. And then we went back and sort of formulated our own ideas about how to approach this issue. And I think one of the things we realized is that, you know, we really needed to step back and look at this thing from a big picture standpoint.
On the next episode of the Golf Podcast, you're going to hear more about the citizen science project they developed to look into water quality issues in Baffin Bay, Texas. To learn more about the history of Baffin Bay, please visit the Golf Podcast website and digital archives. And to learn about the current restoration efforts, check out the Bringing Baffin Back initiative. Before I sign off, I'd like to thank everyone for the interviews, thank my student production assistant, Alyssa Lucas, and thank Lee Rosevere for the music. The Watershed series is sponsored by the Hart Research Institute for Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. Any opinions or views expressed on this podcast, however, may not represent the views and opinions of the Hart Research Institute or Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. Until next time, thanks to you all for listening.